Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your radio of reason, an independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday, October 25th. It's 6:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio. Here you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620 and we'll take your comments on the air. At other times, you may call 903-551-2186 to leave a voice message. Of course, you may send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. We'll try to respond to your questions during our next broadcast. In addition to Liberty Talk Radio, accessing Liberty Talk Radio from our website, you may now access our broadcast from blogtalkradio.com/libertytalkradio. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, my2centsonline.com. That's my2centsonline.com. And that 2 is a numeric 2. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. This is very important in these tumultual economic times. Well, good morning, everyone. This morning's program will focus on freedom versus democracy. We're going to talk a little bit about that and a government doublespeak. There's just so many things that have been going on and so many good articles that I've read recently that apply to that, that I'd like to start with a couple of articles I thought were very interesting. There's one in which the dollar is still being trashed. You know what's interesting? If you listen to the people on CNBC, they lead you to believe that there's a credit crisis is over. The worst is over. We've seen it all. It's behind us, and now we're in this healing stage. Nothing can be further from the truth. Now, I'm an investor, and I watch closely the markets. And I suggest to everyone that you not listen too carefully to these guys, because what they do is they are being funded by the investment houses. This is the advertisers. And there's no way that they're going to tell people things don't look good, don't invest your money, and then expect people to advertise. So it is very, very much driven by those people who are paying their salary, and those people are saying, buy, buy, and buy some more. Everything is fine. Everything is not fine. We have a good economy in a sense, but we are in a wartime economy. And this is what truly bothers me, is that we keep on saying, well, the economy is strong. Well, It's strong because the government is pumping hundreds of billions of dollars a year into the economy falsely to perpetuate a war, an occupation in Iraq and Afghanistan. And not only that, but also to support over 700 bases around the world. And there's nearly 2,000 bases here in the United States. Right. In the last report of employment, the employment figures didn't look that bad. And then they admitted several days afterwards that the increase in employment was due to government employment, not the private sector. Here's where we have to be very, very careful, folks. Things are not bad. I encourage you to go to mytwocentsonline.com. Andy is an erudite individual. He's very educated. He understands this a lot better than I do. I am guided by him as well. And I encourage you to go to his website and heed the warning. People don't like to hear that. They like to hear nicey talk. They like to hear that everything is fine and just continue to do what you have been doing. That is the path of least resistance. We will never, never strive to get better if we continue to do the same thing over and over and over again. We need to change our ways. That is incredibly difficult, the most difficult thing that you will ever attempt to do in your entire life. And this is the time we all must act. All right. I have here, what's interesting, we have now a Democratic Congress, and the Democratic Congress, of course, was going to change a lot of things, and it came time to vote on the farm subsidies, all of which, folks, not some, but all of which should be done away with. We should not have farm subsidies. That's the most ridiculous thing in the world. This was initiated back during the Depression to help the poor farmer from closing up, leaving, going to California or other places. And as a result, the concern was that we would not have enough production to feed our own people. All right. Now, here's about $16 billion annual subsidy, which gives most of the money to corporate farmers rather than small farmers for whom the programs were designed during the Depression. It was approved by the Congress, and this is a Democratic Congress. You know, don't believe everything you hear from these people. We're going to talk about freedom versus democracy, and really that is government doublespeak, and basically we're going to talk a lot about government doublespeak this morning. This is something very interesting. A year ago, people were refinancing their homes in order to pay for their credit cards. You heard, you know, and you still see the ads on TV. Refinance your home, get a one low monthly mortgage payment at reasonable interest rates, still at reasonable interest rates, actually, but pay your credit cards. Well, then what they did is the consumer went from that to rating their credit cards in order to pay for their mortgage. The reverse happened. Now, when they started to tap that out, they started to raid their 401k plans. Now, what's very interesting about the 401k plans, and I found a fascinating statistic, was the fact that only about 40 or 60 people, and I'm not sure, I think it's 40% of the workers who are eligible to participate in a 401k plan. And that usually means free money, folks. This is absolutely free money. You put some money in, your employer puts some money in, it's free money, and it's tax-deferred money. All right, my company has one, and I have employees who do not participate, who elect not to participate, and I tell them they are nuts, and they got to sign a letter saying that they voluntarily are not participating. I'm not keeping them from them because it's crazy not to do that. And the government requires that you sign these tax papers that they voluntarily are not participating. They are nuts for not doing that. It is absolutely free money. Only 40% of the working force who have access to 401ks actually participate. And the average amount in the 401ks is only nationwide is somewhere around $73,000. This statistic's a little old, probably about 6 months old, or maybe a little higher than that now. However, people now are raiding their 401k plans to take the money out. When I worked for Royal Dutch Shell many years ago, there was a fellow working for me, a hell of a nice guy, but his wife liked to spend money. I'm telling you, she was a rich one. And I recall one time I heard him talk about taking the money out of his 401k plan because they wanted to buy a bigger boat. Well, up until that time, I didn't think anyone ever took money out of a 401k plan. I never did. I mean, I never thought of it. I mean, if I had needed money, I would get a loan, but I would never touch the 401k. That was, and to this day, I haven't touched it. I could have touched this money 5 years ago, and I haven't taken a dime out. I mean, that's my future. That's my retirement. It's still my retirement. And yet he took money out to buy a boat, and he told me about it voluntarily. And I said, could I ask you a question? I said, you actually going to buy a boat taking money? And then what I did is I went to, I knew someone who worked in that department. And I said, could I just ask you a question? Do people take money out of their 401k plans, you know, to buy things, cars and boats? And the woman there who I knew pretty well, you know, she said, oh, all the time. And that really shocked me. Anyway, so people now are raiding their 401k plans, and when they have money in there, you know, they take it out anyway, and not for necessarily for necessities. The problem is when they take it out prematurely, they pay a tax penalty. They have to pay the taxes and plus a penalty, and plus then they lose all of the future growth in that. And when comes time for them to retire, they ain't going to have much money. Terrible. Okay. There is a website called Pigs In a Pig's Eye, and I thought this is fascinating. It's in-a-pigs-eye.com. There's a thing here called Common Sense, and I'm not sure if this person writes the Common Sense or he gets it from somebody else, but it is an excellent article. And this article may be written, I cannot find the author on this, it may be written by Ron Paul, but it is absolutely fascinating. I really recommend that you go there. The title of it is, What Good Faith and Credit? What Good Faith and Credit? Question mark. And it goes on to explain who owns money and how we spend it. And let me just read you a couple of sentences, and then we'll move on. He says, who owns the money once the government spends it? In other words, once the money gives it to you, the government gives you the coins, you know, or you get the coins, you buy the coins from the government. It would seem that once I take a piece of metal in exchange for my goods or services, that is indeed my metal from that point on, wouldn't I? Wouldn't it, rather? I mean, if I wanted to mold a copper figurine or sculpture, What business would that be of the government's? Both products still have their base value as that lies in the copper itself. The copper statue, however, may have an even greater value than the penny, depending largely on the perceived value of its artistic merit. So that person hasn't robbed society of any value, as the government officials seem to imply, since the original copper is still intact, and in fact they may have added value to it beyond what the coin was worth to society. That is fascinating. We should really think about that. Just really think about that. It is illegal to melt down the copper, you know, in exchange for something else, or to make it something else. When you consider it really is our money, and this is another situation where we have government coercion, you know, ruling our lives. And it shouldn't be that way. I mean, if the money is ours, it's ours. It's not the government's. The government has nothing to do with it. We've earned that money. We can do with it whatever we want, but again, it's illegal. It says, but whenever any trustworthy entity takes a base metal and fashions it into an identifiable or certifiable weight and purity, that fashioned item will take on a certain premium over and above the value of the base metal. And I will emphasize, always will, irregardless of what the base metal price does in the future. In other words, taking a coin in payment and saving it in a way very similar to investing your savings into a precious or semi-precious metal itself, is really not much different than buying a bar of metal formed by, let's say, as a well-known and reputable metal company. He's absolutely correct. He says that any local scrapyard can supply copper, so why would he want to melt what should always be a more valuable item, a coin, down when he could acquire old copper water pipe at a lower cost? I mean, absolutely. And that goes to the core of our money situation. Yeah, our money used to be coins, and that's the only reference that we have in our Constitution regarding the making of money, and that is the coining of gold and silver, and of course copper in the case of pennies, because each one had some sort of intrinsic value. Now our coins have practically no intrinsic value at all. Prior to 1983, the penny had 95% copper, contained 95% copper, and they're still in circulation. There's plenty of them out there. Nickels did have and still had 75% copper and 25% nickel. That's worth almost double that today. And of course, the dimes, quarters, half dollars, and silver dollars were 90% silver. Well, the only one that still has some sort of intrinsic value is our nickel. And I read an article in the in one of the newspapers, USA Today, I think it was, that the government is shortly going to discontinue making the nickels out of copper and nickel. They're probably making them out of the same junk that the other coins are made out of. But that's very interesting. All right. I'd like to get on to freedom versus democracy. We hear an awful lot from our presidential candidates, and especially from our president. Excuse me. One second, please. That we are trying to spread democracy around the world. And the notion there is that there is freedom and democracy are interchangeable. And nothing could be further from the truth. Democracy is, as Ron Paul has described it, he says, the problem is that democracy is not freedom. Democracy is simply majoritarianism, which is inherently incompatible with real freedom. James Madison cautioned that under a democratic government, there is nothing to check the inducement to sacrifice the weaker party or the obnoxious individual. John Adams argued that democracies merely grant revocable rights to citizens depending on the whims of the masses, while a republic exists to secure and protect pre-existing rights. Yet, how many Americans know that the word democracy is found neither in the Constitution nor the Declaration of Independence, our very founding documents? A truly democratic election in Iraq without U.S. interference and U.S. puppet candidates almost certainly would result in the creation of a Shiite theocracy. Shiite majority rule in Iraq might well mean the complete political, economic, and social subjugation of the minority Kurd and Sunni Arab populations. Such an outcome would be democratic. It would be democratic, but would it be free? Would the Kurds and Sunni consider themselves free? The administration talks about democracy in Iraq, but it is prepared to accept a democratically elected Iraqi government no matter what its attitude toward U.S. occupation? No, absolutely not. It goes on to say in this article, freedom is the absence of government coercion. Our founding fathers understood this and created the least coercive government in history of the world. The Constitution established a very limited, centralized, decentralized government to provide national defense and little else. States, not the federal government, were charged with protecting individuals against criminal force and fraud. For the first time, a government was created solely to protect the rights, liberties, and property of its citizens. Touche, exactly what we've been talking about now for some time. It goes on, he says, we must reassert that that America is a republic and not a democracy, and remind ourselves that the Constitution places limits on government that no majority can overrule. We must resist any use of the word freedom to describe state action. We must reject the current meaningless designations of liberals and conservatives in favor of an accurate term for both status. Every politician on earth claims to support freedom. The problem is so few of them understand the simple meaning of the word. And that's from Ron Paul Touche. I agree 100%. And we hear President Bush and the candidates talk about spreading democracy around the world, as I said before. And what does that really mean? Well, we really don't mean democracy, but it sounds good. It sounds like we have a democracy. We do not have a democracy. We have a republic. If we had a democracy and it was simply majority rule and we voted, there's a good chance, there's a possibility that we still have slavery today. You see, in a republic, there is a government formed to protect the people. Now, unfortunately, when we say that, people think in terms of, oh, people like me, not people that are not like me. Now, think about the people who come here who are from the Middle East and are, in fact, citizens. Some of them are born here and they're nationalized and they're national citizens. I mean, they're just born here like you and I are, you know. But they appear different. They appear like people from the Middle East, so they're not like us. So they are undeserving of the same freedoms that we have. Now, in a democracy, we can take that away because we are right now the majority. And most likely under times of strain and stress, we would tend to do that. We would restrict the freedom of those people. You say impossible? Think back in World War II when we herded all of the Japanese and placed them in containment camps. That's an excellent example of democracy in action. Now, under a republic, and we are a republic, right? Under a republic, and with the government's only charge is the protection of the freedom and liberty of its people, that should never happen. That containment of the Japanese should never have happened in World War II. That was unconscionable what we did. It was prejudicial to the nth degree. But yet, in a democracy, we'll do that. And yet, what's interesting is there is, right now, President Bush has an initiative spending billions of dollars overseas. In fact, he gave Mongolia, I believe, $285 million. $285 million to the Mongolian government to help foster democracy. Not freedom, but democracy. Think about that. Now, democracy can be very, very dangerous, especially in foreign lands where despots already rule. So when we give a despot money to spread democracy, what we're doing is we are giving a coercive government money to be coercive. Now, where that money is going, which is kind of funny, is to improve their railroads so people would have transportation and help the economy. Well, folks, and not that I agree that the government should support Amtrak. I think if Amtrak's going to die, let it die if it can't stand on its own 2 feet. But here we have Amtrak, which is an abomination of a railroad company, and yet we give $285 million to Mongolian railroads. I mean, that is incredible when you think about it. But we do so in government doublespeak because we are fostering democracy around the world. Now, where does that money come from? Well, it comes from your pocket and my pocket. Don't kid yourself. That's the only place it can come. And if it doesn't come from your pocket or my pocket, it is coming from our children's pockets. The government never pays a damn thing for anything. They take it from us and give it away. And then you get government doublespeak in that, look how good it is. Look what we're doing to foster democracy around the world. And of course, the world will be a safer place. I hope we understand that this game is being played continually by our politicians, because politicians rely on coercive behavior in order to exist. That's all government is coercion. Other than that, it doesn't exist. Government wouldn't exist. It couldn't support itself. Let me see. I had another article here that I wanted to read to you. Oh, here's the article on Mongolia. $285 million. Holy shlamoli. But a minority of it will go to, apparently, to support health and education. Health and education. Haven't the our political candidates been talking about improving our health and education here in America? But unfortunately, there's not enough money. Is that not a kick in the head? Here, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful, and murder respectable, and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind, observed George Orwell. Since government is coercion, politics is largely the exercise of deception regarding the intended use of coercion. The benevolence of government rarely transcends the finality of politics. Paternalism seeks to generate mass happiness by forcibly sacrificing as many people and groups as necessary to the greater good. And who defines the greater good? The same people who benefit from maximizing the sacrifices. And that's from an article in Political Accounting by James Bovard. Excellent article. And he goes on to say, he talks about the, so let's talk about government doublespeak. Social Security program was supposed to be a program, you know, for the people, right? And the Social Security Administration for decades told people that their payroll taxes are being held for each citizen, individual accounts. In reality, as soon as the money came in, the politicians found ways to spend it, right? Strictly speaking, the system was never intended to return to individuals what they paid. Accepted as a tax on workers to provide for the vulnerable of our society, American citizens now shoulder over $17 trillion in unfunded liabilities, according to James Bovard. And this is an article in the Freedom of Future Freedom Foundation for Economic Education. It's a September 1999 article. It's a great article, and they archived it. I would read it if I were you. I would really recommend that. He says, American citizens now shoulder $17 trillion in unfunded liabilities. And here's something interesting. He says, a footnote in a draft portion of the report released Monday notes that after 2029, the Social Security Trust Fund will be, and remember, called Trust Fund. You know, there's no trust and there's no fund, will be totally exhausted, and current tax income will be sufficient to pay approximately 75% of the benefits due. But that is not really a liability, the administration's accounting experts explained on Monday, because technically the government owes the money to itself, not the pensioners, and because Congress is free to change the amount paid Social Security recipients. So thus, they don't book it, so the $17 trillion doesn't exist. Isn't that amazing? Folks, we are not a free society, we are a republic, and we're losing it very quickly. We are going downhill, as every empire has. When you listen to the politicians speak, remember, it is doublespeak. There is absolutely no way around that. This is the end of this morning's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or phone in your questions to 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. And remember, folks, don't steal. The government hates competition. Until next time, and that'll be Sunday evening at 8 p.m., stay well, stay tuned.